Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. Sometimes when we touch, the honesty is too much. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And thank you, Venomous Maximus, for our theme song, Dream Again, off the album Beg Upon the Light. Am I correct about that?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
I am correct about that. I don't. Tyler may be agreeing with me. I can't understand. I can't hear anything he's saying. He's just a frozen picture right now. So also we're on Twitter at HorribleCast, HorribleCast. You can find us everywhere else on the internet. We're the Horrible Podcast. Our website's thehorriblepodcast.com. And if you're watching us now, we're on Ustream too as the Horrible Podcast Live.
I like that. I like the Horrible Podcast Live as our mantra.
It's all clicks and beeps over here. It's like you're speaking a different language now.
You guys sound fine.
I don't know what's going on in Nashville, but it is fucking shit.
you guys go ahead with the podcast.
We'll just talk. And maybe Tyler will jump in sometimes. Yeah. Maybe
you guys
won't.
Go ahead and talk, and I'll jump in if things get better. But you guys go ahead.
Tyler's gonna twist. He's gonna do some titty twisting. He's gonna mess with them knobs. See if he can get things working.
That's a creepy picture. Holy crap.
He may be laughing right now. He may be very uncomfortable. I don't know because we can't tell. So anyway, tonight's or this episode, today's episode, if you're listening to this in the morning. Just this episode is
dusk.
2014's The Canal. Or as I thought before you started talking about
the canal.
The canal, yes. Yeah. I was like, canal, all right. So, yeah.
Sell that one.
The Canal, written and directed by
Ian Cavanaugh.
Ian Cavanaugh. Just a basic, real overall feel to this movie I liked. I enjoyed it immensely.
I didn't like it as much as a lot of our other recent stuff. I thought it was the bottom of all the recent great stuff we watched. I mean, it wasn't bad. I mean, I went and saw The Pyramid last weekend, and it was definitely better than The Pyramid. But I mean, when you're talking about the other things we've seen recently, one of which we'll probably talk about a good bit tonight, The Babadook, because it does make an interesting companion piece.
It does.
To The Babadook.
During the movie The Pyramid,
No, I'm just going to say no.
Oh, fuck.
They
didn't play Curse of the Pharaohs by shit.
No. But they do end the movie with like a shitty like 90s
new metal
kind of song. You're like, all right, so you at least know where your audience is with this. But if anyone wants to hear about that, The Pyramid, it was kind of weak. I mean, it was sci-fi grade. I don't know how it made it to the. I don't know how that makes it to the, as many theaters it does, and then things like The Babadook and things like Starry Eyes and things like. Gosh, what are some of the other great things we've watched recently? Even The Canal and other stuff like
that. Or Housebound.
Housebound. Don't make it any bigger than that. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, no, even more than that. It was the directorial debut of Gregory Levasseur, who is the partner, the producing and writing partner of Alexandre
Aja.
And
oh, there
Horns,
you go.
Horns doesn't get a big release. But the shit The Pyramid does. And while Horns has its problems, Horns is infinitely superior to The Pyramid. It's infinitely more interesting, too.
I think you just kind of isolated the problem is they didn't play Merciful Fate's Curse of the Pharaohs during the movie. If someone was like, hey, Brian, the movie The Pyramid's out, how is it? It's okay. They do play Merciful Fate's Curse of the Art, King Diamond's Curse of the Pharaohs. I can't remember if it's King Diamond or Merciful Fate. Curse of the Pharaohs, like, oh, I'm going to go see that just so I can hear that come through in Dolby 7.1.
Yeah. I don't think that solves the problem of why that...
Don't curse, never ever steal, unless you're in for the kill.
That's a good one. I just don't know why... I get that it's a business, and I get how the release structure works and all, but it just blows my mind to see something like The Pyramid get these wide releases and this other stuff.
I just had the Tobias Funke, this business of show... So yeah, The Canal.
Canal.
The Canal. Irish?
Yes.
Are they Irish?
Yeah, it's an Irish movie. It's produced by the Irish Film Association. Can you guys hear me at all?
A little bit.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, I'll say stuff. Yeah, it's definitely an Irish movie. From start to finish, it definitely has a feeling of being Irish. I didn't.
I think it was specifically the potatoes.
Yeah, it was all like. Well, I mean, I watched it in potato vision, so it had potatoes around the frame of the film. But
potatoes powered your TV. You had a potato TV. It was a science experiment.
I don't think it was a bad movie. I just think it. Well, I just think it was like a really like uneven movie, especially towards the end. Like it really loses the thread of what made it the first half of it pretty good. But you know, it's really uneven. I thought the first half was really effective and the second half kind of just lost what in the hell it was about. And then at the end it became like not the omen, but something sinister. I don't know. Like it felt like a drama that had a horror thing in it rather than a horror movie kind of, I don't know. Like there's something about those uneven, but I liked it. It looked good. It was well acted. It just, the script kind of fell apart halfway through, I thought.
We'll talk about this toward the end, towards the end of the podcast, but maybe one of the ballsiest scenes I've seen in a horror film in a while.
But not a ballsy scene at all. Not a ballsy scene. If I can.
Maybe one of the most vaginaist scenes I've ever seen in a film. It all just makes sense now. The canal, the birth canal.
Yes. Yes.
Because honestly, it's a terrible title for that movie.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't tell, I mean, as you watch most of the movie, it doesn't inform you about it at all. And it makes, and honestly, I felt like from its title, I thought we were going to be watching something more akin to, God, what was the tunnel that we watched?
Right.
You know, it just felt like it was going to be some sort of found footage, you know, horror movie set in, you know, with some canal sort of deal going on. I mean, that was one of its biggest weaknesses, I thought, just starting off was just, man, it could have used a better title.
Yeah.
Something more evocative.
Maybe The Canal.
Maybe The Canal. Just change the pronunciation.
Speaking of Canal, man, that wife is getting it in that one scene, isn't she?
I got to say that, yeah, I think that like if they were going to accurately portray this movie with a title, it would be this haunted house that had a bunch of silent films made about it in 1902. Because
that's,
I mean, that's really, it's really about a house, not about a canal. Like the canal really is just the vessel. Huh? It's really just the vessel for the violence, but it's like, I don't think that it's as successful as like telling us. It's kind of a boring title too. It's the canal. Like the movies are kind of hard to do in 2014. We've had 100 years of cinema. Like think of something different, or I don't know. Like it just, it's fine. I think that it ended up doing the thing that it needed to do, but it's just not totally. It's just like everything else feels like almost really awesome. Like on the cusp of being really awesome all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, it should. I mean, I think something better would be a more a sinister title or an insidious one of those more
canal.
You know, just descriptive of a situational kind of deal there. Because it was very one thing. It was very much like along with the Babadook was sinister with the movie watching, or even maybe think of Cigarette Burns, the John Carpenter Masters of Horror deal as well. With just you know, it almost felt like this haunted movie that this you know. Guy was watching that was you know gonna come back and bite him in the end, which
even did. And even at the end it kind of had a ring feel to it with the way
oh certainly
yeah
well there's one scene that is just the ring
yeah
he was like hey where's the ring now
it's it I mean it, what's weird is that like it has these elements but it doesn't balance them well and it almost feels like it abandons the aspect of cinema halfway through like it becomes then just about him like being on the run. It's almost like a Michael Douglas movie from the 90s, but 2014. And I guess I'm feeding off your energy of like, eh, it's okay. I remember liking the first half of it quite a bit as I was watching it. But like halfway through, something turned where I thought that they didn't focus enough on the silent film aspect of it, or they didn't balance it well enough because I had almost forgotten that he was like a film historian kind of person in the first half of the movie. So like I was kind of lost with that.
Yeah. I mean that's ultimately what the only reason the biggest thing I've used is kind of as my mark of criticism about it compared to these other things we've watched recently is I did start out really interested in it and then I found I more and more gravitated to checking my phone and things like that, which I have not done I didn't do it all during the Babadook or Housebound or Starry Eyes. I was so you know enraptured by them and trying to figure out what's going to happen and what's going on, and here I felt less so. Also I did feel like a little maybe like Jacob's Laddery kind of vibe or something there at sometimes with the guy going crazy or is he kind of feel maybe with the dad, a young kid.
I did kind of think that a couple times, like only about halfway through did I realize like, well, maybe this isn't really happening to this dude. Maybe like, he's just also
explain it.
And on the opposite spectrum of the Babadook, I really felt bad for this kid.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh my God, he's just going to leave him with some random baby, rando babysitter. Well, I guess she lived with him, or she was a. I think babysitting and housekeeping works differently in the UK.
That got weird. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, she's a babysitter. Now she's living with the guy whose wife just died. There just feels like there's something not quite right in the situation.
Oh, or something very right with the situation.
Makes you wonder, though. Since you think this time that the kid, you felt sorry for the kid, makes you wonder if Lona would have hated this kid. She felt sorry for the Babadook kid.
So to
because the kid was normal.
This kid was a lot more normal, but also has the most adorable accent. I thought that both kids in the Babadook and here had adorable accents for the most part.
Absolutely. So any accent besides American is good.
Also, one thing that I was a little afraid of going into it, being that it was an Irish film, is a lot of times the accents can be very difficult. And I was very surprised at how not difficult this movie was to figure out what everyone was saying, because that is always one of the more difficult things I find in watching like real Irish cinema at times, is those accents can be really tough.
Well, to back up just a hair to talk a little bit maybe about the movie itself, it begins with a pretty solid crime fiction premise, which is that a guy who what kind of guy would you necessarily say? I mean, he's like a film historian, or what do they say?
Archivist, right?
And a film archivist. So like he has that aspect going for, like he's not limp wristed, but that's the thing that like sort of reminded me of, is that he's just some guy. And his wife is obviously straying because she's not happy with like whoever, like the person he has become or their relationship. Like the backstory isn't really set up that much. It's just that she is cheating and it's with a client. And so I think that's a really great premise. And she leaves one night to go out and presumably meet with this client, and he follows her. And I think this, like, they almost could have stretched this out even a little bit more to pique the interest a little bit more, but you find that the wife is cheating on the husband, on David, the husband, with a random client, like a really not skeezy, but like a guy who himself looked like he would be a film archivist, like long
I
hair.
Thought he was just an Italian director. he must be an Italian director. The artist boyfriend.
And so he
also left that kid home alone too.
Yeah.
I was like, what a shitty dad.
And he came back home, and there were Hot Wheels everywhere and a gold tooth under the piano, and he made it just in time for Christmas morning.
He touched the handle of the doorknob. He's like,
and then he stood under a fire extinguisher, fire blowing on his head for 10 seconds. Anyway, list goes on. A nail in his foot. List goes on and on. But he,
you know, speaking of annoying kids, after watching Home Alone a couple years ago with my kid, I thought, Jesus Christ, if you were Kevin McAllister, I'd fucking kill you.
Too.
God damn, I would have been like, I don't care if this kid dies. I don't care.
Let's leave it. Let's have a vacation in France and just leave that motherfucker at home.
They're like, we don't even have to go to France. Let's just have a vacation from Kevin.
But
they just took the van down the road, the airport.
Right.
The
like,
shuttle.
Everybody just be quiet. Kevin's not around.
To the airport Holiday Inn and just stay there.
Just stay there for a week. And then David makes the classic movie mistake of picking up the hammer and then not killing his wife and wife's lover. And then instead of wiping the prints down, throwing it in a body of water where naturally it's going to be found and tied to him. Almost like, I thought fingerprints were like less heavy than that. It seems like throwing in a body of water, it seems like it would wash the fingerprints off.
Isn't that the whole point of when you're washing the fingerprints off, right? Is with water? I mean, isn't water nature's fingerprint remover?
It just seems like if like wiping it down with a cloth or the bottom of your shirt would take it off, that throwing it in a moving body of water would too dislodge whatever like fingerprints were on it. But anyway, he goes home.
Gross too.
Hmm?
Canal was pretty gross.
The canal
as well. Wasn't a...
the Irish canal is our equivalent of a drainage pond at a new subdivision.
It is a canal.
Yeah, it's a canal. When his wife, do you think that the first act could have been longer? Like that we could have gotten more of a sense of like the husband and wife, David and his wife, not being totally happy with one another before this happens? Or
because I didn't get the idea at all. Like I mean there was kind of a hint at the party, right, of her looking back over her shoulder, but at the same time I was like, oh, he's probably just being paranoid.
Right, but there, I mean, it wasn't even a hint there. I mean, you get from the very beginning, the way he's laying in bed awake and when her phone buzzes and he's, you know, the concern he shows about it, you can tell there's something wrong. I thought all that stuff, I thought Kavanaugh did a great job of conveying, mm-hmm, the distrust or the level of I don't know if animosity is the right word, but just the level of breakdown, I guess, in their marriage. And I like the way they did that.
Breakdown.
And I would also then argue, I would agree with you and say, yeah, we could have gone longer with the first act because the second act didn't add that much. Mm-hmm. Creepy besuited guy kind of showing up and around the guy at times when things would happen. I mean, I don't know if that much happened in the second act that was more important than maybe giving us more of the interesting first act, perhaps.
It is almost kind of like, I mean, at that point, it becomes kind of The Shining, too, with him.
Oh, very much so.
Taking it's kind of like Shining meets Justified. If the.
Justified?
I'm ribbing at Tyler.
He's being passive aggressive.
I saw a quote that said that was what they described his book that way. But no, The Shining was that very idea of like that he's being haunted by,
yeah,
or almost possessed by the spirit of the house.
Yeah, certainly. So this, I mean, like a lot of horror nowadays, I mean, it's cobbled together from a lot of different superior
influences,
sources.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big horror trope at the moment. Let's
possessed say. House possessing you.
Well, no, just ghost. Borrowing from everything that's better than you. I mean,
are you saying The Shining is better than this?
Yes, I am.
Stephen King probably would not agree.
Listen,
if Stephen King had his druthers.
Something new is automatically better than something old. Like, it works with cars, it works with iPads and iPhones.
That's why we all know the prequels are better, right?
This is not the Star Wars podcast. This is the Horrible podcast.
Well, Drew, where were you going to go with that? As far as like that being a trope of like just borrowing blatantly. I mean, we are in sort of a mashup. I hate to kind of use it, but mashup culture, and it seems like this movie's not that, but it definitely does sort of borrow from other movies, and like it kind of bakes it together, but it's not entirely like finished. I think. I don't know. I feel like the second act was okay, but I felt it could have built more of the mythology into it. Like, if you're going to build into this movie, like, add some myth into it. I don't know.
I mean, I would sit there and say, like, one difference I would say in good borrowing versus, I don't want to say bad borrowing, but, you know, more
bartering,
just borrowing, would be like Starry Eyes. Starry Eyes didn't take any, it wasn't narratively similar to any of the movies that it alluded to tonally and visually and stylistically. I mean, it had this feel of the 70s occult movie, but by no means was any of that plot lifted from Rosemary's Baby or, you know, The Omen or Devil Dog Hound from Hell, you know, any of the classics. But this, I mean, that's the thing. Watching this all the time, there were so many scenes just like, oh, this is like The Shining. Oh, this is like The Ring. Oh, this is like, you know, whatever else it's like. And, you know, it just is a much more, you know, I don't know, a much more explicit lifting of narrative and even of style at times. Something like that. But,
like, what are some things you can think of? Like, I get you. I mean, I definitely see The Ring at the end. I thought that was sort of a, oh, they're doing, that's when the monster finally appeared, which is not really it at all. I was more afraid of him going to prison. Like, when that showed up, I was like, oh, this is just The Ring. Like, this is just the little girl from The Ring. Like, what is new about this? Although, they did sort of ameliorate it with something way that I have not seen in a horror movie, which is like a dead, undead birth, ghost birth, which was totally not expected. But
that was intense.
I think the this movie could have been more like Polanski-esque. I mean, I know we've just complained about it stealing from other stuff, but I think like if it had taken more from Polanski and made it more psychological and sort of like, and more about the themes of the birth canal or whatever, make it more sort of like maternal or even switch the genders here, then it could have been a much more interesting movie thematically than it actually is. I mean, it's not, here's the thing, like I'm kind of dissecting it from just an intellectual perspective here. I actually did still like the movie a lot. Until, I mean, I didn't even dislike the end. Like, I think I'm overplaying it. I think I'm, for the sake of like criticizing and reviewing it, but I liked the movie for the most part. I just think it, in thinking about it and talking about it, I don't think that it ties together as well. And I don't understand why the naked people in the video, except it's a horror movie. Like if this were any other movie, we wouldn't just have that from, you know, like Rosemary's Baby. It's just there because it's supposed to be scary, not because it has anything to do with like this movie. Like some the supernatural aspect of this movie doesn't seem to have anything to do with the movie itself.
Yeah, you're right about that, because that's the problem I came up to when thinking about it today. I was thinking about it too. I was like, I mean, was he actually making the footprints in the sand, in the flower? So all of this was in his head, but what was going on really had no bearing on what he was doing.
Right. Or yeah,
the murders that happened in 1902 with this crazy man, and they tried to add the witchcraft and the sacrificing children, but it never really paid off for what was ultimately resolved.
Well, and ultimately this movie does something that is very proud. Like what most, this movie is only guilty of the same thing that every movie that is like it is guilty of, which is anytime you have a protagonist where the twist at the end is that it was him the entire time. He was just hallucinating the other stuff. Is it creates all this like backlog of narrative problems. Like the Fight Club excuse is the most logical, which is like sometimes, but it also is the most problematic, which is sometimes it was you in place of me, Tyler Durden. Other times it was just you imagining things and projecting things. Like that can make sense, but also that is not satisfying when the movie's over. Like as the credits roll, you're like, what about the footsteps? That was supposed to be scary and real. That's kind of like pulling the blanket out from the rug out from under me narratively, because what am I supposed to like hold on to when this movie's over? Because if I wasn't supposed to believe any of this shit, like why do I care about this movie?
Also, let me also say that if I was ever to the point where I thought a ghost was haunting me, I don't know if I could think as clearly as this guy by putting flour on the floor, drawing a circle around my water glass. I'm like,
right.
I'd probably just leave.
Yeah,
he did. The kid left, and he kept seeing the visions in the kid's room. So
that was actually one of my favorite moments of the movie too. And I'd forgotten about it, but when the dad's just like, not even when the ghost appears, but when he's telling the son to like move the computer around so he can see the room.
Yeah.
I thought that was really effective. I thought
it was really creepy. Yeah. I mean, that was, it was done very well. That whole idea of like all right, well, can you not see what's going on? Then he runs, of course, obviously Ireland, because in the United States, it would probably still take like 45 minutes to an hour to get wherever he was going.
It would have been improbable. Like traffic. He would have been beating his fists in traffic. So, I mean, I just, with ghost stories, I either want the protagonist to actually be haunted. Also, I think maybe just the psychotic person who has forgotten that he has done this is kind of a needs to go away as like a narrative device, which this is a slight twist. It's not, here it is different too. It's not that he is totally to blame. It's that he's being influenced by this other force. It's not that it's not being haunted, that he's just an asshole murderer. It's that he is being influenced by this supernatural force. So that's there.
Do you think he just broke when he walked in and saw the his wife just getting fucking railed?
Yeah.
But do you think he just broke then? Because then the next scene is when he was in the bathroom and
that's a good scene.
That is a good scene. That creepy ass, the feet appear and the hands over the top of the bathroom stalls. Like, oh shit, what's happening?
That thing was disgusting. And just imagine that floor and what
it was,
how it smelled. Brian, you always talk about smells. So this is right with you.
Train spotting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, Brian, you talk about smells always, and this seems like this would be a very 70s smelling.
Oh God, that just that raw trucker, like I've been eating burritos all the way
raw trucker
the
sewage,
like sprayed everywhere, and not anyone clean in years, just the needles everywhere, stepping like on balls. Used needles.
Oh, just that just too much piss around the edge because you know I haven't been clean in a while. That
smell, yeah, it's just. I thought that scene was really effective. And so as far as mood goes, this movie does a really great job of setting up the mood. Some of the plot events are less sort of engaging. I don't know, like the scene where he finally breaks is after he murders the blonde girl at the end. So I guess that was just the final straw. Like why did he have no self, I guess not self-preservation, but what is it? Self-reflexive. I can't think of the word, but like why?
Like why didn't he realize what he was doing?
Yeah, why didn't he realize what he was doing before? Was that, how was the ghost to blame for that? Did the ghost just say like, I guess now you can figure it out so you can kill yourself? I don't know.
Satan.
Like, ha ha, joke's on you. Like, why not influence him to kill other people? Like the more bodies the merrier. Just keep using him to kill other people because there were more bodies to collect.
Also,
Canal 2, duh.
Right.
I mean, the cop assigned to the case pretty much just tells us at the beginning who the murderer is. He's like,
it's always the husband. I really liked him too. Like tonally, he's way out on, but he also reacts, even though he doesn't fit in the movie's tone. He fits in sort of like how cops should react to this sort of shit, like when David is trying to when David tries to convince him that like, oh no, it's a ghost and I saw it, and he just bursts into laughter. Like that's kind of how people should react to this kind of stuff because it's insane. Like it's insane to believe this stuff, which in a movie it exists, but here in real reality it doesn't. So I don't know. Like I think that this movie has a lot to offer. So I keep wanting, like, I want to backpedal a little bit on criticizing it because I think that even though it has some narrative problems, it is like it's a microcosm for some of the other things that I don't like about movies, not about this movie specifically, just like ghost stories in general. The way that it does whatever it wants in the moment so that it can either scare you or make sense for itself right now. So
you broke up a lot during that, so I have no idea what the hell you
sorry.
Just said.
It was awesome. It was like every other word went away. So it was like I think it was a.
And then when we had a.
It was all of the
it
words.
Fun to try and figure it out. It was like
also,
a puzzle.
Did any of you guys get the sense that this the main character like Carl Pilkington? That's what I kept thinking the whole time.
I didn't think about it.
This is Carl Pilkington.
Is he in other stuff?
Pilkington.
Is the main character in this movie, is he in other movies? Like, he looked familiar, but I can't quite picture him.
Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, Rupert Evans. He's been in some other stuff, but nothing big, major.
He's the Irish Rupert Everett.
Oh, he was in Hellboy.
Yes.
Oh, that's
that
right. That's it.
He was in Hellboy. That's what I remember him from. Ha.
Yeah. I was trying to remember what the big one was.
The main character in Hellboy.
so a big movie. Character.
The worst character in Hellboy, the I don't need this guy to be my eyes into this world character. Man, that was not one of the pluses in
Hellboy. You're right. I kept looking at him the whole time going, it's Carl Pilkington, but it's something else as well. That makes sense. Hellboy.
Good movie, yeah. So as far as like the plot events going through, I almost wish that it focused more on the film aspect of it. I've sort of mentioned that before,
like the archive stuff that he's finding out about the house. And
yeah, did you guys get a sense of like that they built that world, that we understood why the house, or did I mean, is that something that we don't need more of? Like, oh, we get it, the house is haunted.
Then
it does just become sinister, though.
Yeah, I almost wish that they would have. I almost wish that the house thing, maybe it was real. Maybe I'm just assuming. Maybe it did drive him insane. I'm just assuming that maybe he did break and then wanted to make all these things that were coincidental that happened in the house be the reason that he's seeing all this stuff, when in reality he just lost it.
Go ahead.
No, that was it.
I mean, I have to say that the scene with the murder scene where the first time he sees the guy kill his wife, that's one of the most brutal murders I've ever seen in a movie. Just with the guy.
Yeah, with the stabbing and the neck and the
Oh yeah, it was pretty rough. Yeah, they do a great job with the brutality in the movie. Because and even at the very beginning, when the movie first starts, there's like all those quick clips of video, and it reminded me a lot of Event Horizon. I was like, oh, this is some, I muttered to myself, this is some Event Horizon level shit.
Man, that is a loud movie. That's one thing I always remember about Event Horizon.
Yeah, a loud, bombastic.
Yeah. The pyramid actually rivals it in its final scene. I was like, wow, something that's almost as, you know, awfully loud as... I did like Event Horizon, mind you, but it was awfully loud.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Really awfully loud.
I showed it to Jackson the other day.
No, you did not. Yeah,
Hellraiser in space. Except that Hellraiser actually went to space. But
we were in space before we were in space.
I think it was actually... Event Horizon beats Hellraiser in space.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Isn't it Hellraiser 5?
I think so.
The one where they go back... They're in space and they're going back. It's in space and also in like the French Renaissance.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, two very different kind of.
Did you want
time
the French
periods.
Renaissance there, or did you want the French Revolution? What'd you
maybe French Revolution?
I just
or the Renaissance. Yeah. Let's just say the Renaissance.
Yeah. That was Either way, so I mean, I don't know. There are a lot of things that work in this movie, and that's the thing. It's not like some of the bad things we've watched where there's nothing good to speak of. I mean, the horror is truly horrific at times, and I mean, and the violence is brutal, and it's a very mean spirited movie at times in a positive way, or at least in a watchable way. I mean, that last scene for one, but I don't know. I just think my biggest problem with this, we've seen so many things similar to it that are better right now. Like there's single parent dealing with, with a child and going crazy. Well, The Babadook did that better. And, Am I Being Haunted or Not? Well, Housebound kind of did that better. I mean, it's just weird. I guess maybe just on the heels of what we've watched recently, it was unfair to throw it in here. Cause I think this definitely would have beaten, several of the things at times if we'd watched it on the, following some of the other stuff we've seen, but following the things we've watched recently, it's like, I just saw this and that better.
I mean, right now we just have an embarrassment of riches. I mean, in the dry spell, like when we did Oculus, we might've done this movie instead. And I think we've just found our groove as far as finding movies that interest and like astound us. And this movie, when placed against 90% of horror movies, like if you jumped on Netflix and just streamed through all of the garbage that's on the horror side of Netflix, like things that are just thrown on there, or passion projects that aren't too good, this movie beats 90% of that stuff because it's still a really well crafted movie. It's just we have been spoiled.
On my IMDb page, when I was looking up the like details about this movie, I was given Starry Eyes, The Babadook, and A Housebound as recommendations in addition to this movie. So it was a good. I was like, well, we're following the trend of what we should be watching right now. So
no, I mean, like I will say though, I think one of its biggest weaknesses though is it's far too obvious in the things that do influence it narratively. It's far too obvious in its usage of those sources, I guess. Like, I mean, like that ring scene for one that we always go back to, but the Shining aspect of it. I mean, that guy is very much, a character from The Overlook in the way he is dressed and the way he, the way he even looks at times, the ghostly figure and things like that. And, and daddy going crazy kind of deal with sweet little kid.
And also in this movie, I didn't write down specific instances where I was like, oh, this is great, but there are some it's a very beautiful and almost like to the point of like heartbreaking to know that this is what's happening to this guy and his family.
He doesn't seem like a bad guy. That's
no,
bad
right,
guy.
Right. And then like I do remember like the one scene where he's taken to the sewer to run to the canal, where I thought, as I think with most zombie movies, is like, Jesus Christ, my kid would not be quiet as I try to run with him through a fucking sewer away from police officers.
I think the movie benefits from getting sort of like 10 minutes lopped off in the middle and extending the end sequence a little bit more. It seems kind of abrupt. Like he kills her. The cops show up. He grabs a kid, jumps in the canal. He dies. Movie over, except for the weird coda. What do you think? What do you make of that end sequence with the son?
That was unexpected as well too. Like I did not. Did you ever see the movie Dark Water?
Mm-hmm.
There's that. I don't think so. I thought maybe that it was going to have that, because there's almost a kind of a sweetness to the end of that, where the daughter goes into the elevator and Jennifer Connelly's character, like, shuts the elevator down and just whispers in her daughter's ear, like, "I'm always here for you," not convincing the daughter to, of course, kill herself. But at the same time, I thought it was going to be that sweetness too, like, you know, we're like, I thought when I saw the eye show up in the crack, I was like, "Oh, the dad's going to say, hey, you know, we're here for you if
we'll
you need
always
us."
Be kind here.
Of, it was going to be sweet like that. It did not turn out that way, of course, but he was like, you know, that was rough. It kind of appeals to like every parent's nightmare of a kid opening a car door jumping out of the goddamn car.
It brings up the question that sort of came up with Pet Sematary came out, which is like, how much suffering is too much for a story of this type? And I don't think that the end sequence went too far. Like, I'm not adverse to children being killed in movies, but I just felt like it was an unnecessary final step.
I mean, if everything else this movie did do was fairly typical, a lot of things at least. I mean, so it's a pretty typical end. You got to find some sort of shocking, way to end it. The Carrie ending to to some degree.
And we'll go ahead and talk about it. Like it's two shocking endings, because we get the you alluded to it earlier, the ghost birth scene. Right. And at first I thought, when it first started up, I was like, oh, look, it's just Nasty. She's, you know, her vagina's bleeding. They're like, no, she is giving birth.
Right.
To presumably not his child, too.
It was her lover's child.
Like, what is it with ghosts and wanting to just, like, heap suffering on you? Like, it's enough that they're going to have him kill everyone in his family and anyone around him, but also they have to taunt him as well, like a bunch of assholes. Like, ghosts are assholes.
Mostly. I think that's the movie someone needs to make. Ghosts are assholes.
Ghosts are assholes. Stop leaving my fucking cabinet doors open. Just kill me or something, but stop. Assholes.
The Sony leak that happened last week, one of the scripts that got leaked was Ghosts Are Assholes. That's Ghostbusters 3.
Ghosts Are Assholes. Him doing this.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember what the original question that was.
I mean, there was an original
like,
question.
Do you think this movie heaps too much suffering on like, just for the necessity? I mean, as you say, we had the shocking ending, but I don't know. Are ghosts assholes? I don't know what I asked.
I'm always fine with suffering in a movie like this. I mean, it's kind of the point of it. I mean, it's, you know, it's the argument that sometimes can be made about, you know, Stephen King novels. It's like, dude, your characters have been through enough at this point. You don't have to chop off fingers and then, you know, make them, you know, bald, and then, you know,
don't kill their daughters too. You're already on the verge of killing them. Don't also have someone drown their daughters in a bathtub.
But then you have what kind of is the weakness, I think, of Dr. Sleep, is like, nothing happens to anybody.
No. I want them to suffer and they don't.
It's like, could you at least make there be something dangerous that happens?
Not only did he lose his girlfriend, but now he's going to have a heart attack while there's a risk of someone blowing up a concert.
Got it. I like it. Yeah. I like it. I got that one. Did you get mine, Brian?
No.
Okay, good.
Is it a Dr. Sleep reference?
One thing,
did he tell us the end?
Yeah, he did.
Maybe I don't pay enough.
Stop reading Boogie House now.
I don't
twist. I never started.
I know. I kind of figured. Thanks. I appreciate that, bud. Support.
I am reading it. Screw off.
One of the things I wanted to ask that I don't know if I didn't pay enough attention, but it would change how I viewed this character. I viewed him as largely sympathetic, like someone going through like a really shitty time. But was he also having an affair
with
the blonde
girl? You know, there was that one scene where she's sitting on the desk, right, and she's really close to him. I kind of got that feeling.
But it never shows it.
But it doesn't show it, and I couldn't tell if maybe she was just,
right,
I think
infatuated.
Maybe she was just wanted it, and then, but he was not open to it, and he was not reading the signs. But then when she comes to his house, of course, and she's like, I'll believe anything you
right.
say.
Right. That's the point where I was like, did I miss something? Because she starts kissing him, but he doesn't kiss back. Like, he never... What I think is interesting is that he never lets on to the audience, I guess, that he's also having an affair. I think it's it's kind of an interesting thing that I wish more movies were subtle like that. And so that brings me back around to like, oh no, I do like this movie. It's the acting that I like. It's sort of like the nuances in the relationships. Maybe this didn't need to be a ghost story at all. It could have just been a drama about someone who's tortured about killing his wife. Like, I don't know.
But then Richard Gere would have wanted the part.
Yeah, I know. But if Richard Gere had taken the part, he would have definitely had sex with the blonde. Like, that would have definitely been part of his contract.
Because you almost just described that Richard Gere dying...
Faithful.
Is that what it is?
Unfaithful?
Unfaithful.
The one where she has, like, the Spanish boyfriend and he kills him.
That's the one.
Okay, yeah.
That's it. Or Summersby.
I think it's Unfaithful.
Summersby.
Summersby's kind of like that. Is he or is he not her husband? We don't know.
The Return of Martin Gere. That was the original film.
Was it?
French.
Gerard Depardieu.
Mm.
Whoa.
I did not realize that.
I didn't either. God, I can only see him in the Man of the Iron Mask. Was that him or was that Three Musketeers? Was it Man of the Iron Mask where he was in it?
I think of my father, the hero.
God.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
And what's her name? In a thong.
Yeah.
Catherine Heigl at a very young age in a thong.
God, that was Heigl, yeah. That's who I was about to say, but I was like, no, it's not Catherine Heigl. It's someone else.
It is Catherine Heigl, yeah.
It was, yeah.
Wow. God, what a precipitous downfall she has had from the very heights of stardom.
The heights of working with Gerard Depardieu.
I know. Can't get any higher. but no, I mean, it's that sort of like nuance that I thought really worked for the movie. It kind of brings me back around to like, no, I do. I like this movie, but I still think if you're going to watch this kind of movie, do watch Sinister. Sinister's my favorite of these kinds of movies, as far as like the dude who is investigating a thing and doesn't quite know what reality is.
Is Sinister getting a sequel?
Yeah.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Because
I hope not. Ugh.
Sinister.
Yeah, it's the guy, the Citadel director.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I like that. That's okay.
But the Sinister, because I always get Sinister and Insidious confused.
Yeah, it's easy to do that.
We talked about that, but
Sinister and Citadel?
Sinister and Insidious.
Insidious, sorry. I thought you said Sinister and Citadel.
I like Sinister way better than
Insidious. I don't like Insidious at all.
Yeah,
I didn't either. And I don't... Isn't that what Annabelle is kind of a spinoff of, Insidious?
No, that's...
The Conjuring.
God damn it.
The Conjuring. But is Insidious James Wan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I call myself a horror fan.
I do like Insidious. I like the Darth Maul...
Right, I don't.
That's
where I turn.
No, that's Insidious.
That's Insidious. I turned that movie off at that point. I was like, ugh, I'm over this. I love the first two acts so much, and then the third act, it was just like, what the hell is this movie about?
Yeah, Patrick.
What the hell is a Jawa?
Yeah, just him running around his subconscious world, weird world, or something.
Fuck that.
Felt like a really poorly thought out late Nightmare on Elm Street.
Or that, what's the Stephen King movie with that? Where they're Dreamcatcher.
Dreamcatcher. Which,
the whole end where he's inside his brain.
Okay, which I have to say, Dreamcatcher is one of my favorite Stephen King novels. Most people hate it. And Stephen King himself recently disavowed it in an interview with Rolling Stone where he was like, but he said he didn't like it because it was just way too mean a novel because it happened post accident. But it's one of my favorites. I've probably read it and reread that book the most.
That movie's bad.
The movie is bad. Terrible. Yeah, I did enjoy the...
I didn't hate the book.
I enjoyed the book.
I love the first half of it. Like
SSDD.
I know. I love the first...
Different day.
I think that the idea of kids in a book like reliving their... like I thought that was overused, but the present era like of that book I thought was really successful.
It felt very It-ish with the
like rehashing It, but I never had like a particular like love for It either because it was okay.
The movie It,
yeah,
no, but the book It is probably my favorite Stephen King book, and I think it's probably because it got me at the right time. I think I was probably 14 when I read it or 15, so I was not too far removed from the age of the kids in that book, so. It felt, it grabbed me at the right age, but them remaking It is not going to be it's not too terribly bad. I mean, I don't know if anybody will top.
No one will. No, that's
Tim Curry as Pennywise because he is absolutely horrific.
I thought you meant Richard Thomas. No one's going to top Richard Thomas.
Nobody's going to top Richard Thomas. Or who else was in that movie?
Richard Mason and
Richard Mason,
and Ed O'Toole and Tim Reed and the guy who played Eddie. I don't remember what his name is.
But no, Tim Curry is amazing. No, I would love him to come back as Pennywise. That would be amazing.
It was the last of all the big kings that I read, and I still honestly still think more fondly of the miniseries than I do the book. It was hard for me to get through. It was too big at that point.
You know what I think it was? Is they left out the part in the miniseries where they all banged the girl as kids. Yeah. I was like, why don't they add that into the made for TV movie?
Can't imagine why they didn't.
God, you know what will make us closer? It was like every cheesy pickup line. Or like, you know what will make us closer? We bang.
That's a really unfortunate part of that book in retrospect. Don't you think?
I do. I think it's probably the weakest part. I was like, you could have thought of a better thing to do than fucking each other.
Also, that's really fucking creepy.
Yeah.
Like, that's really creepy. Especially, Stephen King was, 40 at that point, writing about a childhood orgy?
4-year-old writing about a train, running a train on a 13, 14-year-old girl?
Yeah, it's not only is it misogynist, it's just creepy.
Yeah. Whatever gets you through the night, Stephen.
What do you think? Do you suggest this movie, or would you say go back and watch Insidious first if you haven't? Damn it, I did it. Sinister first before this?
Watch Sinister and watch The Babadook and watch Housebound and The Shining and The Ring. And once you've seen all those and you like those, it's like, then check out The Canal.
I don't think I liked Housebound as much as you guys did. I liked it, but I don't know. I think I like the first act of this movie better.
Yeah.
Do what?
No, I think the acting carries this movie. I think the acting carries this film through, and I think that there are definitely some scenes that are very horror worthy in this film too. So it would definitely get. I would say, watch this film. I would say you watch this film.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think I still recommend it. I mean, like I said before, it's still, I think, better than most horror movies.
Like, and you know what, too? It's like, we're not here to, you know, we're just talking about what we think. Don't listen to us. Make up your mind. Listen to us.
Don't come and spend your time with us to listen to what we have to say about this
thing.
Like,
should I watch this movie that's an hour and 30 minutes long, or should I listen to an hour-long podcast about it? These guys spoiled it for me.
So listen to us.
Yeah, just don't watch movies.
PewDiePie.
That's the movie. You'll watch it.
Horrible podcast. So, we have a, if you've listened this far, which
Thank you,
but I doubt anybody else has. We got a little contest we're going to play right now. Got a shirt. From the shirt and a pack of stickers, or a sheet of stickers, from the TV show Hannibal.
Which is really great. If you haven't been watching it, you should.
I have not watched it, but I would love to watch it. But anyway, I'm going to do some trivia. It's a really easy one if you're a horror fan or you know anything about Silence of the Lambs or the whole Hannibal backstory. The trivia is, and here's how we're going to do this game, is if you email Wolfman's Got Nards at thehorriblepodcast.com.
Say that again for the audience.
Wolfman's Got Nards at thehorriblepodcast.com.
We did not think our email address through. I love it, but that's a long-ass email address.
You fuck yourself. You fuck yourself right in your back pussy.
Oh, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Email WGN at Wolfman's Got Nards at thehorriblepodcast.com. The bit of trivia is the first person to email us the answer will, of course, get this, and we'll ship it for it. We will charge you for shipping. So you will have to give us a PayPal. I'm just kidding. Everything, it's all free. It's a contest. You'll get a shirt and a 8.5 by 11 sheet of stickers for the movie or the TV show Hannibal. I'm fucking all this up.
That's fine. Question you get stuff.
Is, give us who was the first person to play Hannibal Lecter, and what was the director of that film?
And what was the title of that film while we're at it? Yeah, just give us all
that
information.
Get that far.
I'm going to keep adding stuff now. Let's just keep adding.
Also, who was the best boy on that film? That actually might be the hardest trivia. Who's the best boy on it for extra credit? We'll send you some of Brian's chin hairs if you get that right.
We'll send what?
We'll send some of Brian's chin hairs, some hairs from his chinny chin chin.
So yeah, give us who the first Hannibal Lecter was and who directed that film, and you will be the proud recipient of a Hannibal shirt and a set of Hannibal stickers to do with as you please. Send it to Wolfman's Got Nards at thehorriblepodcast.com. And we, if I recognize your name and you're a friend of ours, you're not going to get the gift. You're not getting the prize.
Spit everywhere. Yeah.
And by the way, the shirt is large. Okay. So it's not an extra large.
That's why I didn't just take it.
Right. Not a medium, not a small. It's a large shirt. So, you know, if you're small, like if you're a twink like Drew,
sleep
then
in
you're going
to
wear the swink to sleep in. If you're, you know, a muscle bound. You're a muscle bound idiot like Tyler who needs XLs and double XLs.
I wear mediums
to accommodate his muscles.
I wear a medium.
Yeah, a medium in the big and tall
section. A muscle medium.
I get it.
Is he the what he looks for in his shirts when he's at the store? Is like slightly fitted through. That's what I need.
Oh, I love you, Brian.
All right, yeah. So if the contest. If we get any responses, I'll be super happy.
Someone please bring Brian off the ledge and send us a response.
Right. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I can make excuses to what I'm doing every Wednesday night.
Brian needs a reason.
Reason to believe, guys.
Someone like you makes it hard to live without.
What episode is Shannon on at this point?
He said he was just listening to... I can't remember.
Doesn't matter. We're live streaming still, so hey, everybody.
Yeah, you know.
We're having fun.
Next, we have to pick a... let's pick a shitty movie next to talk about so we can make jokes about it.
Okay. I can't think of one on the air. I mean, I think there would probably be shitty sections in ABCs of Death. Like, we would definitely have something to make fun of. No? No.
I didn't hear a word you said.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, no, we're not doing that movie. ABCs of Death. There would probably be shitty sections of that movie.
Worst yet.
Yeah. You might as well just be, you know, underground right now talking to me.
You're in the canal.
Yeah, you
the
are.
The thing is,
the
people
canal.
On the live stream probably have no idea what you're talking about.
You know. You know, we still, not that, I'm not saying these are the, like, movies to make fun of, but we still have VHS and... VHS Viral and ABCs of Death 2.
I just said ABCs of Death 2.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you because it kept cutting out.
That's what I was saying is there's
got some old.
There's bound to be
shitty. We should get a good old, like, ridiculous movie.
What about Chopping Mall or some, like Silent Night, Deadly Night for Christmas?
Videodrome.
That's a good movie.
We'll play around with
this. Yeah, we got time. We have a whole 7 days to come up with this.
All right, we'll just
Tyler's frozen. We got palsy victim over there. or stroke, whatever.
Yeah, I was going to be palsy, he would be shaking or something. All of that just became really offensive.
That's what they do. I'm not making... I didn't say, hey, stroke victims, I know that you're... Sometimes you get frozen. And that's not offensive.
So let it go.
Oh yeah, there you go.
All right.
I can do that too.
Let's call it a podcast, guys.
You need a new monster dog. That's what we need.
If you don't point out that it's offensive, nobody knows it's offensive.
That's a good point.
Right? You're drawing attention to it.
Right.
I can't tell if Tyler's playing us out with Venomous Maximus.
I am. I'm playing us out.
Okay. Or if it was just him hitting a snare drum.
All right.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. Maybe it sounded great. I don't know because everything froze up on us. So
God, just go. Like, you are such not a performer. Just do what we do. Like, no one who hears... Only people are going to point out that, it must not have worked because he said it. Okay.
Oh, dude, were you talking? You broke up.
Okay.
So, hey, I'm Brian.
Tyler.
I'm Drew.
And thanks for listening to The Horrible Podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.